Welcome to Whose Podcast Is It Anyway? A show where our host engages in a lively conversation with a guest. The guest chooses the topic, and the host has no prior preparation or knowledge of the topic. Please note that the opinions expressed on this program are the opinions and views of the host and the guests, and are not necessarily the same opinions and views of Chad Knight and Point of Insanity Network. And now, here's your host, Al Seeger.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Whose Podcast Is It Anyway? Episode 52. I am your host, Al, and let's jump right in with Welcome to My Mindmare. So what's on my mind? Two words, martial freaking arts, baby. I started studying martial arts again. When I was in college, that's when I first started learning martial arts, and it became a big part of my life where I would practice it almost religiously, and it helped me lose a lot of weight in college. But then after getting out of college and a few things happened in my life, and I got out of it for a while, but little over a month ago, about a month and a half, I started studying a new martial art, Kung Nu, which is a Vietnamese martial art that combines hard style aspects and soft style aspects from several different arts like judo, tai chi, boxing, Shotokan karate, Wing Chun, and a couple others as well. So really excited. It's done a lot of good for me so far. Definitely been feeling a lot better, and it's just helped me feel not better, not just physically, but also mentally and emotionally as well. Because previously I had studied Tang Sudo, I'd studied Tiger Claw Kung Fu, Anai and Eskrima, and American Freestyle Karate. So I really like the martial art I'm studying right now, and you know, really like the instructor, the style, the people I practice with. So that's, like I said, it. Really happy to be back and getting in the dojo and practicing martial arts again. So today we're going to have our guest, Mr. Chad Knight. How's it going today, Chad?
It's going really well. Hey, I got a question for you, though. You were doing your little mind mare thing there.
Yes.
What is the difference between hard versus soft aspects of martial arts?
Okay, well, most martial arts usually are fall into either hard or soft, in that hard styles tend to rely more on direct force and, you know, raw power. A lot of times, like most forms of karate, kickboxing, those are usually classified as hard styles. Soft styles tend to rely more on redirecting your opponent's force. A good example, like, would be Aikido. If you've ever seen, like, a Steven Seagal movie where he uses Aikido where, you know, someone punches him and then he does something and throws a guy flat on his back. So soft styles usually are focusing more on technique and leverage and using your opponent's force against them. So Kung Nu, it's, like I said, it takes hard style aspects from some arts and takes some soft style ones, and the name itself actually does mean hard and soft.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, Chad, now that you asked me a question, I get to ask you a few questions with a segment called, well, cleverly enough, Five Questions.
Hey, where'd you come up with that title?
Maybe it's because we asked the guest five questions.
All right.
We're just excellent at this naming stuff, aren't we?
It sounds like it, yes.
So first, now Chad, I know that you're a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft. So what would you say is your favorite story by H.P. Lovecraft?
Well, that's not even a hard one. That's easy. That's Rats in the Wall.
Okay. So can you give just a brief synopsis of Rats in the Wall and what you like about it?
Sure. Rats in the Wall is a story where a young man inherits a house from, I can't remember if it was a grandfather or an uncle or something like that. And he moves into this old house. It's up on a cliff overlooking the ocean. It's, you know, beautiful landscape, that kind of thing. And as he's there longer and longer, he starts to hear things in the walls. And over time, it gets louder and it gets more persistent. And finally, he starts trying to track what's in the wall. And he tracks it down to a sub-cellar. And it just tends, it's a bunch of rats. But it tracks to a sub-cellar, which goes down even further. And he follows it down until he comes into this old cultish type, I don't even know what you'd call it, like there's a altar, and you know, so a sacrificial area. And through it all, he finds books and clues that point to the fact that his uncle was one of these cultists. It pretty much ends, the story ends when he comes face to face with his uncle or grandfather, whoever, in this area. And then you get the distinct idea that he has been eaten by the rats. So what I like about it is it's very much in the style of Poe, as far as you have to figure out what's going on. He gives you the skeleton of a story and you have to fill it in. And your imagination does that for you, of course. And it's just very much rats, to be honest, rats make my skin crawl. So this story makes my skin crawl. And when it comes to this kind of stuff, that's one thing that I enjoy, is when a story allows my mind to take over and fill in the blanks.
Okay.
Versus it all being just, you know, hand fed to you.
Okay. Next question. So
sure.
Let's say you are stuck in a cabin somewhere for a month, and we'll assume that you've got plenty of food to last and plenty of necessities like toilet paper and soap and whatnot. But let's say you're stuck there with one video game, one music CD, one movie, and one book. What would they be?
Ooh. The book would probably be The Gunslinger by Stephen King. The video game would probably be Sonic the Hedgehog for Sega Genesis. What was the other one?
A movie and a music album or CD.
Okay. The CD would probably be The Essential Billy Joel. And the movie would probably be Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves.
Okay. So if you could have, when we were kids, of course, we usually thought about what we wanted to be when we grew up. Sometimes we had realistic expectations.
Question number three?
Yes, question number three.
Okay,
so question number three. Now, when we were kids, we had all sorts of ideas about what would we want to be when we grow up. So if you could be any occupation in the world, real or fictional, what would it be?
Oh, wow. So you're not asking me what I wanted to be when I was a child. You're asking now if I could have any job, what would it be?
Well, even if you were thinking from the mind of a child, like, you know, if you could have been anything you want, you know, an X-Wing.
Well, let me answer this in two ways. I was a unusual child. From the time I was about
you
eight.
You don't say.
From about the time I was eight until I realized it really wasn't a possible dream, I wanted to go to Harvard and become a lawyer.
Okay.
Now, if I could have any job, you know, honestly, if I could have the job and I didn't have to worry about the financial part of it, not like the doing taxes and things, but the actual financial part of starting up the business, that kind of thing, I would probably own my own game store.
Okay.
Again.
So you wouldn't.
I absolutely love doing that. It was just, you know, financially, it doesn't make sense most of the time.
Yeah, and that's understandable. You mean you wouldn't have want to been like a Jedi Knight or an X-Wing fighter pilot or a Veritech pilot or anything like that?
You mean when I was a kid?
Yeah. Sure.
Or when I was a kid, no. And I know this is going to shock a lot of people, and it's probably going to, you know, hurt my nerd cred, but I'm not a huge Star Wars guy.
Okay.
I've said that before, but it's just one of those things. It's fine. It's a great sci-fi flick, you know, that kind of thing, but I've never gotten into Star Wars the way some people do. Now, I don't know actually where you stand on that. I think you're a Star Wars fan, aren't you?
I'm a Star Wars fan, yes.
Okay. I would much rather watch Trek. Now, if you could have told me, you know, if you want to go that way, if I could be a Starfleet commander or a Starfleet captain, oh, God, yeah, in a heartbeat.
Well, who wouldn't want to be like, you know, Jean-Luc Picard, you know, sitting there in your chair, make it so, number one.
Right, stand up and, you know, do the Picard move.
Yep. So, next question.
Sure.
If you can play a role-playing game, doesn't matter, Call of Cthulhu, Dungeons & Dragons, any RPG you want, with anyone mm-hmm. in the world, who would it be? And if you have, like, a couple ideas of people you would, you know, your dream D&D group, who would it be?
Will Wheaton. Vin Diesel. Gary Gygax. And probably my buddy Scott.
Okay. That's cool. And so the final question.
Sure. Now,
I know you're a H.P. Lovecraft fan, and you're also a fan of professional wrestling.
Yes, I am.
So what would be your ultimate professional wrestling dream match? So let's say Vince McMahon comes up to you one of these days and goes, Mr. Knight, I am going to let you book the main event at the next WrestleMania.
WrestleMania 34.
You can pit any wrestlers you want in the world. We'll pay for them. One night only, your dream match. Go.
Living? Do I get a living or dead variety on this, or just currently active?
Sure. We'll assume that Vince McMahon has the power to resurrect the dead, or, you know, or hey, any two professional wrestlers, no matter where they were in their career.
Okay. Oh boy, that's really a tough one. I would have to say I'm going to make it a tag team match.
Okay.
We're going to have Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, the Rockers, versus, oh God, there's so many good ones. Probably Demolition. Nope, I'm making it a four-way dance. And Legion of Doom. And one of the current tag teams, the New Day.
Okay, not familiar with New Day, but I'm familiar with the others, so that okay. I think would be interesting.
Demolition has been and probably always will be my favorite tag team. They were the longest reigning tag team champions until 4 months ago when the New Day took over. New Day outlasted them by, I want to say, 9 days. So there's a new record for longest tag team. But yeah, no, I mean, I enjoy tag team wrestling. Probably more than singles wrestling, because singles wrestling is very easy to look at two people and kind of book the match. Tag teams, there's always that element of surprise. And then you get tag teams or singles guys and you give them a manager. You can throw any predictions out there, but that manager or that additional member can change something real simply, you know? So that's probably the way I'd go with a four-way dance of tag teams.
So let's move on to the next segment, This Day in History. And I got this from history.com. Again, they're not sponsoring the show, but of course, if the fine folks at the History Channel, history.com, would like to sponsor the Point of Insanity Network, hey, drop us a line. But anyways, so on this day in 1978, so July 28th, National Lampoon's Animal House, a movie spoof about 1960s college fraternities, starring John Belushi, opens in U.S. theaters. Produced with an estimated budget of $3 million, Animal House became a huge multi-million dollar box office hit, spawned a slew of cinematic imitations, and became part of pop culture history with memorable lines such as, "Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son." Set at fictional Faber College, the University of Oregon start as a stand-in during filming. Animal House centered around the disreputable Delta House fraternity, whose members enjoyed beer-soaked toga parties and crude pranks, such as putting a horse in the dean's office. Animal House was the first major big hit for director John Landis, who went on to helm The Blues Brothers in 1980, Trading Places in 1983, and Coming to America in 1988. The film's cast included then-unknown Kevin Bacon from Footloose and Mystic River, Karen Allen from Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Tom Hulce from Amadeus, all of whom were just then beginning their movie careers. Animal House was co-written by Doug Kenny, Harold Ramis, and Chris Miller, whose days at Dartmouth College in the early 1960s served as an inspiration for the film. Animal House marked the first film produced in affiliation with National Lampoon, a college magazine that was first published in 1970 and known for its dark humor. Other National Lampoon movies included Vacation, which was written by John Hughes, directed by Ramis, and starred Saturday Night Live alum Chevy Chase. At the time Animal House was released, John Belushi, who played party animal Bluto Blutarski, was starring on the TV sketch comedy known as show Saturday Night Live. Belushi, who was born January 24, 1949, appeared on Saturday Night Live from 1975 to 1979 and co-starred in the hit movie Blues Brothers with his Saturday Night Live castmate Dan Aykroyd. Belushi died of a drug overdose at age 33 on March 5, 1982 at Chateau Marmont Hotel in West Hollywood, California. So I have seen Animal House. Not my favorite movie. It was okay. It had its moments. But have you ever seen Animal House, Chad?
I have. In fact, I own the double secret probation version of it. But you know, my favorite National Lampoon movie is Van Wilder, who starred a very young, very not known at the time, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I saw that one. It was okay. And now for me, my college comedy movies I usually go to are probably Revenge of the Nerds. You know, the first one was good, but after that, they just weren't as funny and weren't as memorable as the first one. The second one was okay, but the third and fourth ones weren't that good.
They made a fourth one?
Yes.
I saw three, which I was not impressed with. I didn't even realize they made a fourth one.
Yeah,
but you're right. Revenge of the Nerds, the first one, is classic, you know, I guess college humor, but classic humor just in general.
Yeah. And, you know, both Revenge of the Nerds and Animal House are movies that we kind of look back on as adults while we laughed at them as we were younger. It's like, you think about it, it's like, you almost kind of wonder, why are we rooting for these guys? Because, okay, the reason that the Delta House was in trouble is because they weren't abiding by college standards. And even you look at Revenge of the Nerds, some of the things they do, I mean, yeah, I can understand why they want revenge against the Alpha Betas, but it's like, okay, what do? They set up a camera so they can watch Alpha Pi, the female sorority?
Yeah.
So they could watch them get dressed and take showers. They broke into their house and stole a bunch of panties. They distributed pictures, naked pictures of one of the sorority members.
Yeah, the head cheerleader, wasn't she?
Yeah. They cheated to win the college, you know, their college games.
Olympic, yeah.
And then the main head nerd, I forgot the guy's name, he essentially deceives the head jock's girlfriend into having sex with him. It's funny, but it's like, yeah, you do this in real life, you're going to be in a wee bit of trouble.
Yeah, you're going to be in jail. Not a wee bit of trouble. You're going to be in jail.
Yes, exactly. I mean, getting kicked out of college would be the least of your worries.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be lucky to get one of those correspondence courses done.
Yeah. So I've dictated the show for a bit now. So now we move on to Chad. And Chad, what subject are we going to be talking about today?
Well, that's a good question. Why don't you guess?
Well, I actually had a couple ideas I was guessing on. I'm thinking either martial arts or religion.
Wow, and you missed on both of them.
Oh, okay, swing and a miss.
What I want to talk about is something that both of us do. We both do podcasts.
Okay.
You've got your Geekery in General, you've got Who's Podcast, and then I've got the shows Want to Hear Something Interesting, and I have the show Musically Challenged that are both on your channel. And the big question I want to start with is, why do we do podcasts? What is it about podcasting that makes us get, you know, sit down in front of our computers with a microphone and little else most of the time, I would guess, and talk to people that we don't know if they're listening to us or not?
That's a good question. And I think it's, well, it's fun. It's something we like doing. And I mean, I think in some regards we like sharing our ideas with people. Now, whether that's a good thing or bad thing, I think that's really going to kind of depend on what type of ideas you're sharing, of course. But, you know, when you look at some of the stuff we do, like with Geekery in General, you know, we do try to do episodes where we talk about, you know, role-playing games. So at least for me, I'm hoping that maybe if there's someone out there who is planning a campaign or, you know, maybe they're trying to think about some ideas they want to do with their gaming group, maybe they'll be able to listen to an episode of Geekery in General. And, well, just as an example, I've done several episodes on historical gaming.
Right.
Where, because back in the 90s, during the days of second edition, TSR released a group of supplements called the Historical Reference Series. And it told you about how to run games in, like, you know, ancient Greece or the days of the Roman Empire or the Viking Age. So I decided to do a series on some of the cultures that weren't touched in those books. So I've done like Egypt and the Philippines and Thailand as examples. And it's just because I just thought it was fascinating and I enjoyed doing the research as well as, you know, doing the actual recording.
Well, I got to say, I recently listened to your hell, your heaven, and your Nirvana, your nine hells, your seven heavens, and your Nirvana podcasts. And, you know, exactly what you're saying is exactly what you do. It is exactly what I listened to these and I went, you know, that's an idea. That's something I could do. That's something I could incorporate into a game. Now, will I ever do it? I don't know. You know, each game is different. Each game, for the way I do things, each game writes itself. So am I ever going to run? I've never really run an episode where the gods are truly involved. But if I ever do, you know, I have information I can go back on. I can go back. And in my head, I'll be like, oh, wait, you know, Al talked about this. And then I go back through the catalog and I find what I want to listen to. And the ideas are there.
Cool. Yep. And that's, again, one of the other reasons I did it, because I actually did find some interesting things when I was doing some of the research for those other cultures. And, you know, I even enjoyed doing the research on the – because right now I'm doing a series – where I'm talking about some of the outer planes as pictured in the first edition book, Manual of the Planes. And, you know, I try to take a look at some of the historical and mythological inspirations for the plane. And I'm just like, okay, how does this compare to how it's pictured in Dungeons and Dragons? Like, for example, when I was doing the episode on the Nine Hells, I talked quite a bit about Dante's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, so here's the different layers. How are they different from, you know, as the layers as pictured in Dante's Inferno, and how are they alike?
Yeah, I would have liked slides for that episode, actually. It would have been really nice where you have, you know, Dante's Inferno in a picture and then, you know, the D&D Nine Hells, so that you could kind of be like, all right, so this is where we are kind of thing. Because there was a few times where I had to go back and I'm like, wait a second, what? And then I had to go back and listen again because either my, you know, either my mind wandered for a second or something, but the information was lost and I had lost where we were at. But that being said, really cool episode. Now, my next question is, you've been doing this podcast for a year now. Where was the inspiration for this podcast? Where'd you get that?
Well, that actually came from this good friend of mine, this all-around cool guy I know. Maybe you've heard of him, Chad Knight.
Yeah, I've heard of him. I heard he's a loser.
Well, some people say he's a dork and a geek and that he, you know, he farts in public and that, you know, he picks his nose and flings boogers at people. But I think he's a pretty cool dude. But, you know, the idea came from, you know, some people like to talk and some people like to think they're good at improvising. And, you know, because who doesn't like going to, like, comedy sports and, you know, improv? Have you ever been to any improv comedy shows?
Yeah, actually, I've been to comedy sports two or three times.
Yeah, because we had a comedy sports that come to my college back in Oshkosh a couple times. And yeah, it's always fun to watch them. And I think that, you know, being the host of the show, it's challenging because you got to be ready for anything. You never know what topic the guest is going to throw at you.
Actually, not too long ago, my wife and I want to say about maybe May, April, maybe it was, I had for Mother's Day, I bought us tickets and we went and saw Colin Mochrie and Brad Sherwood from the show Whose Line Is It Anyway? And they came out and they did an entire night of improv with just stuff that people yelled at them from the audience. So, you know, I love improv. I think it's one of the hardest things to do. I've done it before. It's not easy, but it's a lot of fun. And if you pull it off, and I'll say in all the times that I've done it, I've pulled it off and I've not pulled it off. And when you pull it off, though, it's kind of satisfying, too.
Yeah, that is true. And because for anyone who hasn't seen comedy sports or comedy improv, there's, at least from what I remember, there were a few different things they would do. They'd have different events, and there were a couple of, there would be teams of usually two or three, and there was someone who would act as the referee. And of course, he dressed in the, you know, the zebra stripe shirt. And like they might say from the audience, okay, give us a person, a movie, and a food. And the team would have to do a little skit where they would incorporate those three things. Like, let's say, for example, they said for their person, Chuck Norris. For the movie, let's say that someone said Star Wars. And then for a food, they said cheeseburger. So now you have to think of a way to work Chuck Norris into Star Wars and somehow work a cheeseburger in there. So, I mean, if you were just trying to think right on your feet there, how might you pull something like that off?
Well, you know, when Chuck Norris was down the road having a cheeseburger at In-N-Out Burger, a Death Star came into the atmosphere. I know that's not possible, but for the last sake of the story.
He looked up and he saw the Death Star approaching.
He looked up and he saw the Death Star. He then, with his supernatural powers, accelerated himself through the atmosphere to the Death Star, in through the little hole, exploded the Death Star, and then there was just Chuck Norris.
And then he went back to In-N-Out Burger and finished his cheeseburger.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean that was actually pretty fun. That was actually pretty good. So yeah, but you'd have to try to find a way to work that into, like, I think it's usually pretty short, like 2 or 3 minutes. And then they would have, like, there was this other event I remember. It was like forward, backward, where it was along the same lines, except, okay, the ref would say forward, and you would improv your little scene And then when he said backwards, you'd have to do everything you did but in reverse.
Right.
So, I mean, that would take a lot of skill to pull off.
One of my favorites when we were watching the Brad Sherwood and Colin Mochrie show is they would be doing this scene, right? And when somebody would say something at any time, the other guy could say switch. So you'd have to say the same thing over, but in a different way. And he could say switch whenever. So, you know, you'd be going along and you'd be talking about something. And then Al would say switch. And I'd go, you'd be going along and you'd be conversing with each other about a topic, you know, kind of thing. So they have to say the same thing, but they can't use the same phrase. That one was always kind of fun because, you know, they would, of course, wait until you said something that was almost impossible to say the same thing in a different way. And that's when they would get you. But, you know, I enjoy improv in a lot of ways. And I suppose doing podcasts is kind of improv in some ways, especially this program where you have no idea what we're talking about until we get to it.
Exactly. And I mean, sometimes it is a little easier when, like, for example, one series that we do on Geekery in general, though we haven't done it in a while, we were calling it, at first it came from Netflix, but then we decided to come up with a new name because we weren't always doing Netflix. We were going to call it Two Geeks, One Film.
Right.
And it was essentially we'd watch a movie on Netflix or Hulu, and then we would, you know, kind of do like a review of it. And In that case, it was one of the things about that is, yeah, we both went in there knowing what movie we were going to talk about, but we never knew how we were going to feed each other in that or how we were going to play off of each other.
Right. And when you and I record, what a lot of people don't realize is we're not sitting in the same basement together.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in Wausau. You're sitting in the Green Bay area.
Appleton area.
Oh, Appleton area. I'm sorry. Appleton area. But we don't even have a video screen up. I'm looking at a picture of your little Transformer GoBot thing here.
Yeah, for my Skype picture, I have a, just for anyone who's maybe seen it, Generation 2 Transformers, it's a Grimlock toy. And I'm looking at Chad's stern-looking mug here, just kind of looking in the camera like,
Well, you know, that picture is from when I first got Skype up, and I'd never used it before. And it's like telling me I have to take a picture of myself. So I'm just like, I'm trying to figure it out. And it snapped the picture somehow. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing a different one. So that's what people get.
You look like looks kind of like you're sitting on the toilet and you're trying to squeeze one out.
Actually, I'm sitting on the couch. And that doesn't mean I'm not trying to squeeze one out. All right. So I guess next, my next big question, my big overview question is, where do you get your ideas from? Where do your ideas come from? Because, like, for me, and I'm going to talk about my two podcasts here. As far as, what the hell is the name of my podcast? Are you want to hear something interesting? Okay, let me restart that. So I'm going to start with my podcast. Like, so when I sit down with my buddy Scott and we do an episode of Want to Hear Something Interesting. Now, this podcast is more of a scripted podcast. We go out, we do the research, we bring our talking points, Scott and I talk, we go back and forth. It's a give and take type episode. But we will get together 2 weeks or so before we do the show and we'll say, okay, what are we talking about? Or do you have any ideas or do I have any ideas? Or we'll text each other and I'll say, hey, Scott, what do you think about the Scopes Monkey Trial, for instance? And he'll say, all right, that sounds good. Or he'll say, I don't think I know enough or do I want to know enough about that topic to do that, you know, kind of thing. So that's how we go back and we shoot ideas back and forth. We decide on an idea usually about a week before we record. We spend a week doing our research and then we get together and we put out a 45-minute to an hour and a half episode somewhere in there once a month. So that one's pretty straightforward. My Musically Challenged podcast, which is one we do let me rephrase that. That is one that gets released weekly. But what we'll do is we'll come up with some ideas. And every episode has 14 songs that we talk about. 7 are talked about by myself. 7 are talked about by my co-host, Lou. And we pick our seven songs. We write up a little blurb on them. We listen to all 14 songs because we got to talk about them all. And then we just do an episode based off of what we think of the podcast. It really has nothing to do with, it's not about how the music is put together. It's not about how, what the backstory to the music is for the most part. Though we may talk a little bit about that, it's about whether or not we like the song and why we like the song or not. So those ideas come from a lot of places. Mostly it's brainstorming. We'll sit down and we're like, okay, what do we want to do? You know, we started off with the easy stuff, covers. We did, like songs with certain words in the title.
Yeah.
We did an 8-piece. In fact, that one's still going. We did an 8-episode thing on decades of number ones based on the Billboard Hot 100. So, things like that. The only time we really don't get a say in it is we do have episodes where we let the listeners write in a set of 14 songs. We split up their 14 songs and we do it like any other episode, except we have no control over the music picked. We just released one of those, what, Al, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, one of your daughters.
Yeah, one of my daughters. One. We just got another one through email from a guy in the Netherlands. He sent us 14 songs, so that one will be coming up probably within the next 6 episodes or so, because when we record, we'll sit down and we'll record anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 episodes in a night. And then, then we stick them out 1 week at a time. And that just has to do with schedules.
I used to try to do that because I have a good friend named Dan who does a podcast called Radio Free Borderlands. And it's about Dungeons and Dragons. And he talks about all editions. So it's not like, okay, I'm only going to talk about second edition and, to the abyss with the rest. No, he'll talk about any edition. And just because we have the same problem that you do, where sometimes getting our schedules to work, but, occasionally we would, get together and we'd record like, 2 or 3 episodes at a time. And that was nice because then it's like, okay, I spend a day editing these 3 episodes and then I can relax for a little bit.
Right. So where do your ideas for your geekery in general come from? I mean, obviously your Who's podcast, you don't really have to worry about a topic because your guest brings it in.
Exactly.
Your geekery in general, are they just things you think up? Do you get input from other people? Where do your ideas come from?
Well, I haven't had any viewer requests yet, but really it kind of comes from just about anywhere, really. Sometimes I just think it's like, okay, I want to do an episode about the 9 hells and the 7 heavens and stuff. So, hey, put them together. Sometimes the ideas come from things that, come from conversations I've had with people. Mm-hmm. Good example, a while ago I did an episode called Can Games Be Used to Teach? And I was talking about, using gaming, mostly video games, to try to teach controversial things. And what inspired me to do that is this was a couple years ago when I was first starting to do podcasting, I was at my local Best Buy looking for, a microphone. And the guy who, was helping me, is like, well, what do you need it for? And I mentioned podcasting. And we got talking about games and stuff. And he was talking about a video game design class he took and how I forgot the game mechanics, but you had like a circle on the screen and you were trying to interact with other circles on the screen. But if you don't get to them, they move away and the screen starts to turn black. And then eventually the entire screen goes black, no matter what you do. And then there's a message that appears that says, every day or every year in America, this number of people commit suicide. If you or someone you know may be suicidal, call this number. Here's a website you can check out. And the mechanic for the game, it was supposed to represent how some people deal with depression, where you're trying to reach out to other people, but you can't. Either you're afraid that they're going to laugh at you or say, oh, you're not, it's not that bad, it's all in your head, or which is unfortunate because depression is an invisible illness. I mean, you can have someone who looks just fine on the outside, but if they're suffering from severe depression, you know, they could be in a lot of internal pain, you know what I mean? And another thing that inspired me is you probably remember where you were on, I'm wanting to say it was like April 20th, 1999.
Not ringing a bell.
Okay. Let me give you, okay, might have the date wrong, but there was a bunch of, there were some several kids that got shot up at a school in Colorado.
Oh, okay. So the Columbine.
Yes. I mean, I still remember, yeah, it was April 20th, 1999. Well, several years after that, after the massacre, there was a person who used a program called RPG Maker and made a video game called Super Columbine RPG, where you are playing as the shooters. But, and of course, that was a lot of controversy, but the person who created the game, he said he didn't do it as a way to glorify them. He took like news clips and some of the stories around that time, and he was trying to present it as a way to think, okay, what could have been going on in the heads of these shooters and what caused them to reach this point where they wanted to shoot up and kill a bunch of people at their school. And what made me think about that is, you know, there might come a day where people download that game and give it a try, and they're not, they might not be aware that it was based on a historical event, something that really happened.
Okay.
So that's how I got one idea. Other times, sometimes I'll do more current event stuff. Like, for example, you've probably heard of Final Fantasy VII.
Heard of it, sure.
Okay, maybe not played it, but when there was the talk of the remake coming that was starting to be put into production, I just did a little quickie episode called Should Aerith Live? Because, spoiler alert, she's a major character in the game that dies. And, you know, so it's like, okay, well, I was giving my thoughts about in the remake, should you be given the ability to bring her back to life? Because one of the rumors that's been going around for years is there's supposedly there is a way to bring her back into the party, which there's not, but it's something that people would, you know, post stuff about.
Mm-hmm.
So other times, another series I do is called Bargain Bin Adventures, where sometimes if I'm at like a GameStop or a used video game store, I'll see a game that's being sold for like 99 cents. You know, or okay, a couple of dollars. So what I'll do is I'll buy the game and then I'll, you know, I'll record an episode and it's basically just my first impressions of the game. And some of the games have been really bad where, yeah, I see why you were selling it for a quarter GameStop. But there have been a few that I've tried that actually were really fun games.
Okay. Now, my favorite game of all time is Sonic the Hedgehog. What do you think of Sonic the Hedgehog?
Honestly, I never got into it, and I did do an episode on that for another series I do called, sometimes I'll do flashback episodes.
Okay.
Where I'll talk about, you know, I'll do a video about a video game, usually from the 8-bit or 16-bit era, and, you know, then I'll put it, I have a YouTube channel that I put them up on as well. But I never really got into Sonic the Hedgehog, and for me it was more or less a matter of pacing, because a lot of the game was based on, okay, run, 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 speed, speed, speed. Okay, now here's a part where you gotta stop and slow down and pay attention. Okay, now run, 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 speed, speed, speed.
What's about getting the coins, man? The rings.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just never really got into Sonic the Hedgehog. So what are your opinions on that game? Because I know it's a game that you've liked in the past.
Yeah, and I'm talking the Sega Genesis, because I know they've redone it since then on several occasions. And my issues with graphics and getting motion sick, I'm guessing most of the new ones I couldn't play anyway. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun because you would run really fast, but you had to pay attention. You know, because if you were running fast and you didn't notice that obstacle that made you slow down or made you think about the way you were going to do it, you'd fall and you'd lose all your rings real easy. You'd die, for lack of a better word. But Sonic never really died. He just went back to a checkpoint, basically. Because you never, if I remember correctly, I don't think you ever ran out of lives on that game.
Yes, you do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, because the core mechanic is when you collect the rings, and you probably remember this, you get hit and all the rings fly all over the place.
Well, not all of them, but it's a portion of them.
All of them. So it brings you down to zero rings, but you can try to collect some of your rings again. And as long as Sonic has at least one ring, he can always take a hit. He just has to make sure he gets the ring back. So, I don't know. I never really was a fan of that particular mechanic. And, I mean, there's a lot of people that say once Sonic got to the 3D era, the quality of the game started to go down a lot.
Okay. And I don't know. I mean, that was a long time ago. When was Sega Genesis? That was the late 90s?
88 or 89.
Oh, wow. So was that, yeah. So I suppose it was before I was in high school.
Yeah, and I remember it in middle school. And because, of course, anyone our age probably remembers the 16-bit wars, you know, the Nintendo Sega console wars where,
yep.
because Nintendo, well, at the time the Genesis was released, Nintendo was still supporting the 8-bit NES. And
right.
the marketing for for the Sega Genesis campaign was, you know, they had their slogans like, you know, Genesis does what Nintendo don't. And, you know, their whole thing was based on how, you know, blast processing, 16-bit graphics, you know, it's awesome. And, you know, and then Sonic, of course, being their mascot to fight against Mario, it was all based on, you know, hey, kids, do you want to be cool like Sonic or do you want to be like Mario? This, you know, because, you know, Sonic was that. You know, he was that hip and cool and sassy and rude and, you know, where Nintendo or they just had Mario, that little mama's boy. And well, then the Super Nintendo came out and I think it generally did a bit better than the Genesis did.
Yeah, probably. All right. So let's get back to podcast, though. So what are we, since we share a podcast? A podcast channel. What are we doing right?
Well, I think probably the main thing we're doing right is we do offer a variety of shows, which I think can be both a benefit and a hindrance. Like, let's say, for example, let's take my friend Dan's podcast, Radio Free Borderlands. He just does Dungeons and Dragons and topics related to D&D. So,
right.
If you don't like Dungeons and Dragons or have no interest in it at all, then his podcast might not appeal to you. Whereas with the way our channels, you know, work, since we offer a wide variety of topics, well, let's just take geekery in general, for example.
Okay.
You know, if you have someone who really likes D&D but really isn't much into video games, okay, they might like some of the episodes we do on Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games, but they might just pass over the video game episodes.
Right.
Which is
what I do for the most part, just so you know.
Yeah. No problem. We all have our interests. So we're casting a wide net, which I think it can be an advantage and a disadvantage in a way.
Okay.
Which, Yeah, I said, yeah, we're offering a variety of content, but on the other hand, since our topics do vary so much, I think it can be hard to attract a universal audience.
So out of the four shows that we put out, which one has the best viewership at this point?
Honestly,
or I guess it's not viewership, it's listenership.
Honestly, it fluctuates. I would say usually Musically Challenged generally does really good. And I will admit for my Geekery in General show, it fluctuates where sometimes I get, I'll do a show where I'll get, just a few listens, and sometimes I'll do a show and it gets, a significant, more listens.
Well, and I think that probably has to do with the topic though too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as I said, the video game episodes, while I enjoy doing them, usually don't get as many hits as the role-playing game episodes I do.
Now, how do they do, though, on the YouTube channel where people can see them?
Not really too well. I really don't see the reason I started the YouTube channel, it was more as a way to supplement the podcast. I mean, I'm not going to be like PewDiePie or Pro Jared or the angry video game nerd who, essentially makes real money doing the YouTube episodes. Now, granted, YouTubing is an entire its own animal altogether, especially with all the copyright stuff that goes around there. My son wanted to do a playthrough of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And before the episode is even posted, it gets a copyright hit from Nintendo, which basically means that, they put, they can put ads on it. But I suppose that's better than, them forcing me to take the episodes down.
Yeah, that's better than a cease and desist.
Exactly, but with the number of views I get, it's like, ha, joke's on you, Klopp copyright guys. You're probably spending more money trying to find my episodes to get an ad put on it than you're actually getting revenue from the views. So, joke's on you, motherfuckers!
All right, so in the same vein then, what are we doing wrong? What can we do to increase distribution or increase, anything like that, to listenership?
I'm not really sure because I don't consider myself very good at promotion. But the main thing is just trying to share it on social media and trying to get the listeners to, share it with, their friends. So,
right. I've kind of started a campaign of that when I put out my stuff onto Facebook underneath the you take care of the POI network stuff, but then under the individual titles, I also do a web or a Facebook page, and I always tell them, if you enjoy this, share it. It doesn't take long. It's a share button. It takes two ticks and it's shared.
Yeah,
you don't even have to say anything. Just share it.
Yeah, so listeners out there, like I said, share the app, share the programs with your friends if you like them. Trust me, we do appreciate, we do appreciate it. But one thing I noticed, because the website that we host on, Podbean,
right,
they do give you the ability to see how many episodes have been downloaded on a given day. I haven't really gotten too much into it, like saying, which episodes are being downloaded on what day, but usually it just shows the number, and occasionally I'll just hit a huge spike. Like just earlier this month, it went from one day where there was like 11 downloads to the next day, like 160. So usually I would chalk that up. It's probably someone who's just starting to listen, so they download a whole bunch of episodes and then probably spend a few weeks listening to them. But it is always nice when you do see those spikes, because it lets you know that, hey, there's people that are watching, or not watching, listening.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. So then where do we go from here?
Well, I think I know we've talked. There's ideas we have. Like I know for a while I've been talking about doing trying to do like a radio drama, which you know we've actually worked on some scripts for. But as I said, we just gotta. I have to anyway get my button gear to try to get those put out. So that's one thing yeah. I know I'd like to do. But
yeah, I haven't went any further on mine since the last time I sent a copy to everybody.
Yeah, so. You know, that's one thing I think we can go, but really I think the next step is just really trying to get, get the word out to get more listeners. Because so, let's face it.
Less talking and more doing, huh?
Yes, exactly. But this year has just been, part of it is just this year has been just crazy. Because my mother had passed away earlier this year. So, you know, my sister and I have been spending the last few months trying to get all the affairs in order and such. So that's taken up a bit of time recently, but anyways, so yeah, I think really where do we go is just try to find new venues and to get more people to listen and not necessarily to stroke our egos or anything. It's just, we're creating these shows and I hope when people listen to the shows we do, they think, hey, these guys like what they're doing and they're putting a lot of effort into it. They're trying to make a good product. Mm-hmm. Even though it's available as free downloads.
Right.
You know, so I think that, you know, I'm hoping that even if it is a small listenership, that they really appreciate the work we do and that they do listen to the episodes and hey, maybe these guys, you know, got me to thinking about something like, you know, your first episode you did of Want to Hear Something Interesting, you know, about ghosts and ghost hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think it was Scott was saying that one of the theories for why we see ghosts has to do with a fourth dimension, time. Which right. means if you're seeing a ghost, you're actually seeing someone who's not in sync with their own time, which would explain why, you know, you might be in an old house and you see someone dressed in clothing from the 1800s. And the reason they're walking through a wall is because in their time, that wall wasn't there. So right. it's an interesting theory and it got me thinking, it's just, okay, is there any scientific research as to could that be possible?
Right, exactly. All right, man, that's really all I had was what we've talked about now. So should we let everybody in on a little secret?
Sure.
So this was my one-year episode of Whose Podcast Is It Anyway? I'm sure it didn't take you guys long to realize that Al is not the usual host, but we did this, I agreed to this because I thought it might be nice to know what it's like to be on the other side of the microphone, because I've done 51 episodes where it's really about what people bring to me. It's not about what I say about any said topic, because I only can say what I know. And there have been topics where I didn't know much. And there have been topics where I've known a lot. But the point of this exercise for me was to, after a year, to sit here and go, okay, so this is what it's like to be the guest. And it's actually kind of enjoyable. I don't know, Al, you've been on the show 4 or 5 times in the first year. Do you usually find it to be an enjoyable experience?
Oh, yeah. I enjoy it because even, again, speaking how I've been, usually I've been the guest and I've been the one offering the topic. It was, you know, in that situation, you know, you do your, maybe you do a little research and you make some notes for yourself. Okay, these are some of the things I want to talk about when, you know, on the show. You go in feeling a bit more prepared. Now, of course, I still don't know how you're going to react. And what direction the conversation is going to go. But I do admit I was a little nervous going into this here because it's like, okay, what if he brings up a topic that I know nothing about? You know, what if he says, we're going to talk about the literary works of Ernest Hemingway.
Well, that would make two of us that don't know anything about it.
But, yeah, so, I mean, if I don't know any of Hemingway's works either, so... And well, actually, I mean, I think it was like, what, episode 3 your friend talked about, was it Discworld?
Yes, about Terry Pratchett, yes.
So in a case like that, I mean, I remember you said you didn't really know much about that author.
It became, when I don't know much, you can usually tell because it becomes more of an interview than a back and forth discussion.
Exactly, and we're like the first episode we talked about pizza.
Yep.
And obviously that was, you know, that would give you the impression of being more of a back and forth because we were more or less just talking about pizza because who doesn't like pizza?
Exactly. You know, and actually I got a little scared because the first episode you did pizza, the second episode the guest did ice cream, and I thought, oh my God, everybody's going to come to talk to me about food. I'm like, I know I'm a big guy, but come on, people. You know, and I'm sure that wasn't your look at it you did it. But, you know, it was like by the third week, I'm going, oh, my God, what are we going to talk about now? Sushi? You know? And thankfully, it was Terry Pratchett. So, but yeah, so why don't you jump into what else you got here, Al?
Well, we like to close the show with a quote. And what we used to do in the old days is you'd give the quote and you'd have the guests try to guess who said it. So let's try that. I'm going to read a quote, and then I want you to guess who said it, and then we'll discuss it a little bit.
Okay.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. You put water into a cup. It becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle. It becomes the bottle. You put it into a teapot. It becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend. Who do you think gave us that little nugget of wisdom?
The world's most interesting man. No. wow. I really have no idea, but I'm going to go with that was could have been Poe. Could have been Lovecraft.
Nope.
Sounds like something either one of them would say, but no. Who is it?
Bruce Lee.
Okay.
And, I mean, most people apply that to martial arts where, and what he was essentially trying to say is, at least the way I always interpreted it, is that, you know, a martial artist in combat has to be flexible. You don't know what a fight is going to bring. So you have to learn to be able to adapt to the environment. And when he also brings about how water can flow or crash, I guess for me, I think that perfectly fits with my own martial philosophy, and especially with the Kung Nu that I'm studying now, where it can flow. It can be gentle, you know, like a gentle stream, or it can crash like, you know, the tidal waves from a tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? I mean, I think you said you studied martial arts for a little bit.
Yeah, for about 6 months. I did a form called Pasaru. But I didn't really have a style. My style was trying not to fall down. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you have a basic idea because, I mean, with him being, you know, so much into martial arts, I think you're most likely on the right path there. Maybe it's not exactly what he was trying to say. And of course we'll never know exactly what he was trying to say because he's no longer with us, but I think you're on the right track. I think that's kind of, where I think he was going with that.
Yeah. Now, how do you think you might be able to apply that philosophy to your everyday life?
It's called rolling with the punches, my friend.
Yep. Right.
Really, that's what it is. And in the line of work that I do, rolling with the punches is what I do every day because I work a lot with customers. And if a customer changes their mind, it doesn't matter if it's 3 weeks before I start the install or 3 days into the install, you have to make the adjustments. That's what my job is. I roll with the punches. They call me a project coordinator, but really I'm a big bag that people punch around, and yet I'm very happy to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, I mean, sometimes martial arts philosophies can be applied to everyday life. One notable example that I can name off the top of my head, there was a famous Japanese samurai, Miyamoto Musashi, and he wrote his book, A Book of Five Rings, where it's not only studied by students of martial arts, but it's also studied by Japanese businessmen as well, because it is designed to be it's a book on strategy. How you want to apply that strategy is entirely up to you. And in the translation I have, I remember the translator was saying, another one of the interesting things about the book is a novice will be able to interpret it differently as a novice than when he becomes more skilled. So, you know, that white belt just starting to learn karate or kung fu or martial art, they're going to have different ways to look at it than, you know, the sensei, than the sifu, the instructor who's been doing it for a couple decades.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to thank you, Chad, for letting me take over your show for an episode.
Not a problem. Now, let me interrupt you because I do want to put out a little teaser here. On the next episode, so the episode one of what I'm calling season two, is going to be actually, I'm going to try something I've never done before. I'm going to have two guests on at the same time. Now, they are Jason Oblivion and his buddy and co-host Jake. They do a podcast called Dark Science Radio. So I'm giving that a try next week, and we'll see how that goes.
Little freeway action.
Yeah, in fact, it's kind of funny because they do this podcast together, but one of them lives in California, the other one lives in Florida, and I'm in Wisconsin. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, it's. I mean, just working with the time zones, because I have a friend who does a podcast, Lost in the Static, and again, he's in Wisconsin, but one of his co-hosts is in California. The other one's in England.
Ooh.
So, yeah, he always jokes, his co-host from England, his name is Glenn, and he's always joked, you know, their joke on the show is that he's from the future because,
right,
because, you know,
it's already the next day there.
Yeah, and he says he hates to disappoint us, but still no flying cars yet.
Oh.
But yeah, the machines haven't taken over yet either, so hey, that's a good thing.
It's not so bad here. We're going to record at noon on a Saturday because then it's noon for me. It's 11 o'clock for Jake, and it's 1 o'clock for Jake, and it's 10 a.m. for Jason. So I don't know. These guys have a pretty raw podcast, but on that same note, I think it'll be interesting because they have a great amount of information amongst the two of them. So I don't know what I'm getting into, but I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So, all right, if you want to take us out, Al.
Okay, take you out, like, to dinner, to a movie?
Well, I mean, it's going to be our first date, so dinner and a movie, maybe.
Do I have to do both the same time?
Well, yeah, and I don't eat cheap. I'm just letting you know.
Can I just take you out for coffee or something?
I suppose it is a first date, so coffee's
okay.
Good.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining us on Whose Podcast Is It Anyway? So hope you all enjoyed the show, and don't forget to leave a like, share the shows with your friends, and we'll see you next time. And now the creepy music plays for my outro.
Yeah, so
did you know that that's that music that I use for the outro? It was a song that my band in college made, And we never actually wrote lyrics for it, but we had several ideas for what we wanted. It was just kind of a creepy little song. What do you think?
I kind of like it. I like the outro. I like the fact that all of them on the channel had the same outro.
Yeah, and I thought that was a good, I thought that was a good, you know, just as a way to unify everything, so.
Yeah, yeah. So and hopefully I didn't come across as too tired tonight, because I am beat, dude.
Yep. You know, I'm still recording, so should I was thinking, you know, I could, like, put the, underlay the music under it, the full song, but.
Oh, you could.
I could.
I mean, you just, of us just babbling on our way out?
Yes, us babbling like idiots while we listen to the creepy music in the background, and but you know that's I don't know the is that getting too long-winded?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good night, everybody. But you know you have no control over it because I'm the one who does the editing.
I know you're doing the editing on this one.
You're at my mercy, sucka. You have been listening to a program from the Point of Insanity Network. Visit us at poigamestudio.podbean.com for more shows. Follow us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at POI Game Studios.